What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm your host, Sarah Rudolph, and we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk some men's hoops. We're going to talk some women's hoops. We're going to talk some softball, because that's right, softball is just 2 weeks away, and we released our 2025 preseason awards and poll today, so we've got a lot to talk about. And since we are talking about softball today, he couldn't stay away for long. We have on the show today, Josh Yonas. He's back. He's joined us again.
Couldn't keep me away.
No, he just couldn't keep you away. So it's a basketball show. But like I said, we're talking about some softball today, too. So happy to have you on to talk all about this. You're no stranger to Conference USA basketball, as you covered a lot of it on the men's side last year.
I'm the men's hoops SID alum.
Yes. So we are definitely going to get into those things. But before we do, as always, got to go over a couple of housekeeping things. So please be sure that you are following us on social media at CUSA Insider Pod. If you are currently watching the show right now, then you have found us on YouTube. Please go and subscribe to that page so that you get notified when we post a new episode. But if you are still with our audio only crew, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. All right. Let's get into some hoops talk first. We had a great, interesting, whatever you want to call it, weekend in men's and women's basketball. I was just telling everyone before we got started, my husband asked me over the weekend, who's good in Conference USA basketball this year on the men's side? And I was like, everyone and no one all at the same time. It's very confusing to figure out who's going to be good and who's not going to be as good. And so we are going to try and figure it out here. But I can tell you this, Middle Tennessee, New Mexico State, and UTEP each sit at the top of the standings at 4-1. So that I can tell you for sure.
Yeah. And I've had similar conversations. I had a couple trips last week where I was around a lot of fellow conference SIDs and, you know, we're just kind of, you know, talking about random stuff. And like, oh, who's good for, you know, in basketball this year? And I was just like, oh, you know, women, it's always, you know, Middle Tennessee is always the perennial favorite and everything. And I was like, on the men's side, I was like, all cliches aside, I was like, I think any of the 10 teams that are going to the tournament could make a run and win the tournament. And, it, you know, we're just going to be blessed with being on press row and watching all of the chaos ensue. But yes, yeah, we have a trio of teams kind of in the driver's seat right now with the three teams that you just mentioned. And then you have three win teams right behind them on their tail.
Can't forget about them either.
Yeah. So it's all just kind of a mixed bag there at the top. According to KenPom, CUSA is ninth out of the 31 Division I conferences in league net. So it's not just, you know, a bunch of bad teams beating up on each other. These are good teams that are beating up on each other a little bit. But it's for good reason, because we have a lot of really good talent, a lot of really good coaches, good teams. So yeah, who knows? Between now and then, these three teams could all finish in last place for all we know between now and March, whatever the last day of season.
Truly crazy. I mean, you look at New Mexico State, who was 7-6 before conference play started, and now they are 11-7. They lost one conference game. They've won four. It is absolutely insane, and I love it. I mean, it's tough on us as a league to say, okay, we don't know who our front runner is. We don't know if we're going to get two bids because everyone's eating each other alive, but it is fun to watch. It's kind of similar to what we were talking about during football season when all of those teams cropped at the top. We're all eating each other alive, and we had no idea what was going to happen, but we have had a lot of really good games this past weekend. Some games that were good for some more than others, obviously. But we are looking forward to seeing what it comes out of this week's game as well. But UTEP, I want to talk about them first. Coming off a 2-0 road trip at Liberty, at FIU, they are winners of nine of their last 10. So they have a 9-game win streak going on. Really good stuff for them. And then we had a buzzer beater at the end of that Liberty game to give Liberty their third conference loss and another UTEP win. Ahmad Bynum clutch. He was clutching both wins, but scoring that last second basket with just under 3 seconds to go. They beat Liberty 72-70. So that was a good one. And Miners defense ranked number one, first in the country in turnovers forced per game with 17.78. So, and steals per game. I forgot about that one, with 11 per game. So UTEP minor defense coming out and firing on all cylinders. And I'm excited to see what they can do going in through the rest of the season, because they were my pick this year. I thought that their roster was lining out really nicely. Their schedule was lining out nicely. They're 14-4 overall, obviously 4-1 in conference play, as we had discussed. So they're doing really good things right now.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this later when we get into our softball discussion, just around the concept of coaches who win. And Joe Golding is one of those coaches. Yeah. Everywhere he's gone, every season, it seems like, you know, even if it's relatively down the year, like, he can win games. And I think, you know, and as expected for a Joe Golding team, you talk about some of those defensive statistics, that is his bread and butter. Mm-hmm. He wants his team to play tenacious defense. He wants you to kind of keep you on your toes, force a lot of mishaps. So I'm not surprised by that at all. And I think that they will continue to bolster those numbers as they run through all the teams in the league.
Yeah.
And I think an important thing, you know, it, just as we talk about what's going to separate a team as we get closer to the tournament, UTEP was in that title game last year. So for those guys that are on this team that were on the team last year, when you step into that building knowing that you were capable of making a run last year, there's just that little extra edge, mm-hmm. a little extra confidence when you go in there, because you know, they came in as I believe they're either 4 or 5 seed last year, and again, made it to that title game, right. Upset a few teams on their way to that matchup. So again, they knew they were capable of it then. So no matter what seed they end up getting in the tournament, they know that they're capable of doing it again under Joe Golding. But right up the road out there in the borderlands, New Mexico State doing some incredible things in year two under Jason Hooten, another coach that I've worked with in the past when I was at the Southland Conference and he was back at Sam Houston, and another coach who just knows how to win. And there were a lot of struggles in year one, but I knew it was not going to take him long to right the ship out there in Las Cruces and get this team back to the winning ways, right there at the top of the conference right now, beating some of the big dogs in the league.
Yep, a lot.
Oh, yeah. They can score. And again, so yeah, the kind of dichotomy of these two teams where it's like you've got a UTEP team that leans on its defense, wins based on, you know, forcing a lot of mistakes. And then New Mexico State team that says, we don't care how many points you score, we're going to score more. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a lot of their wins have been, they've been in the 80s, 90s, even for some games. Right. So they will score in droves.
Coming up this weekend, they both have a pair of home games, which if you know anything about those teams, they are great at home because mm-hmm. they draw huge crowds. So excited to see both of those games. But those two games are against Kennesaw State and Jacksonville State. So they'll do a flip. So let me look at it here. Let's see. Kennesaw State will play New Mexico State tonight. Jacksonville State will play UTEP tonight, and then they'll flip. So Jacksonville State will play New Mexico State on Saturday. Kennesaw State will play UTEP on Saturday. But those teams, those are some...
They're both coming off of 2-0 weeks.
Exactly. 3-2. Those are those 3-win teams you were talking about that are just behind them. So anything can happen.
Yeah. Set for a big swing here this weekend against those teams. I can guarantee they were practicing, for facing these two incredible defenses all week in practice, because you have to play at your A game, not only because of the talent you're facing on these two teams, but again, going back to the environments in those two arenas is incredible. And, you know, I don't know that they'll have the 11 or 12,000 that they have in the stadiums when UTEP and New Mexico State play each other.
Right.
But they are both at the top in terms of average attendance. So it'll be loud. They'll be right on top of you, trying to get in your head a little bit. So good luck to the Owls and the Gamecocks this week out on that one. But, they're the two teams that are the lone unbeatens at home. So they're used to having to get it done at home. But, now you got to go into some really tough environments and still manage to win games, which, as we know, is incredibly hard in this league this year.
Absolutely. And we had Kennesaw State's Adrian Woolley on earlier this year, but Braden Liu became the third Owl freshman to win CUSA Freshman of the Week this season. They start 3 freshmen in their lineup. So going into a big, big weekend, like what we were talking about with big crowds, we'll see how they fare. But you talk about New Mexico State, that team scoring a lot of points. Kennesaw State scores a lot of points as well. Those freshmen, I'm pretty sure all three of them are averaging 15-plus points per game. I know that Braden Liu averages 18 points, averaged 18 points in their last two games, and I know Adrian Woolley is doing incredible things, 20 plus points per game. And then Jerron Pierre Jr. for Jacksonville State, He is the league leader in scoring with 21.6 points per game, ranking him fourth nationally. So you talk about scoring a lot of points. Those teams can surely get it done. So we'll have to see what they do against New Mexico State and UTEP this weekend. I usually pick two games to watch. There's four for you. And then we still have some other really good ones that are going to be out there as well. Louisiana Tech's playing Middle. Louisiana Tech is playing WKU, I think, as well. So those are two other games that are going to be huge ones to watch as well.
Yeah, I mean, Louisiana Tech, it's two opportunities to play on linear television. Hosting WKU in Middle. So they'll be on CBS Sports Network tonight at 6 p.m. Central, on ESPNU on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Central. But going back to the youth of this Kennesaw team, I mean, I joked with our men's basketball SID, Eric Jones. I was like, we just need to rename the Freshman of the Week Award the Adrian Woolley Award, because he has won six of them. And I didn't count how many we've given away, but that is most of them. That is a majority of the awards that he's won. Putting up insane numbers, 18.4 points per game, shooting 51.6% from the field, which is eye-popping for someone, you know, who's not a center, right? Like, if you're not a big man, just putting up high percentage shots and you have a rate that high. Yeah. And then 5.1 rebounds a game, 3.4 assists. So I think if we had to guess right now who our freshman of the year is going to be, probably if it's not him, it's probably going to be a Kennesaw State Owl. Yeah. But yeah, Woolley putting an incredible year together. Just a really talented, 6'5" guard, a big, big kid. Those are the kind of guys that you see on Power Four rosters. So, praying that they keep a lot of those guys in house, and because the future is definitely bright there
for sure
in Kennesaw. But let's shift gears to women's hoops.
Let's do it.
A huge, monumental upset this past weekend. And really, it wasn't that the upset was that big, because WKU is still an incredibly good program. Just moved to 4-2 in league play with a win early on in the minutes, right before we started recording. But just the, with them beating Middle Tennessee, snapping a 33-game Conference USA win streak, is just insane. And funny enough, do you remember who they began that win streak against?
WKU
in 2023. So I liked how I was reading their recap again, and they had literally said how fitting it was that the Lady Toppers are the ones who ended it.
So, and a rivalry too. Yeah. So that's I can add the weight to it as well
in those games. But so with that loss, in Liberty winning over the weekend as well, they move into sole possession of first place. Again, after that big game in the 100 Miles of Hate rivalry, women's standings are looking a lot like the men's standings, which is weird. Because, we were just talking about how if someone asked us about the league, it's really, it really was kind of the one horse on the women's side. And then we had a lot of teams on the men's side.
Right.
But the standings look, eerily similar with, the Lady Flames at the top at 5-1, 4-1 Middle Tennessee, 4-2 WKU, another 4-win team in La Tech. Mm-hmm. And then now you have two more 3-win teams on their tails. So it's creating quite the logjam there. I know it's early, but, there's not a whole lot of separation between that the teams at the top half of the standings.
It is very true. I know that this is going to be a really interesting season on the women's side as well. I mean, you look at the top two right now, Middle and Liberty. That's the matchup from last year's championship game as well. So could we see that again? Who knows? Who knows? Like we were just saying, the middle of the standings are a little crazy. But I do want to shift over to another team. One of those 3-win teams that's coming up right on everyone's tail is New Mexico State. And they have a young lady on their team who we got to talk to live last week. Jessica Radford took care of that interview for us. Molly Kaiser.
Certified baller.
Certified baller. Absolutely. She claimed her second consecutive Player of the Week award this week. She had an impressive week. They split their games 1-1 this weekend, but she recorded a total of 59 points in two games. 59 points. Scored her fourth 30-point game of the season with 31 points against Liberty. She's averaging 26.6 points in league play. Certified baller, like you said.
A full 9.4 points ahead of the next score.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's wild.
Because I was like, okay, surely there's got to be a little bit of separation because no one else is scoring like Molly Kaiser is scoring right now. But yeah, the next one is averaging 17.2 points per game. So you have a respectable scorer amount between 1 and 2, because 9.4 points per game, yeah, like that's nothing to blink at. But
goodness gracious,
yeah. And then she's 8th in Division One in scoring overall. So again, going back to, like, I know we talked about it early on in the year with how strong both the men and women are for Conference USA, and that continues to be the case, because Conference USA, I need to go look this up to see if we're, you know, how many other conferences have a top 10 scorer in both men's and women's basketball. And if there probably are a couple other conferences, it's probably, you know, ACC, SEC, like we're probably right up there with some of the, you know, most talented players in the country. So yeah, shout out Molly. She's
balling.
Crazy.
Balling.
But
there's another squad though that's got some girls in their team that are doing great as well. We talked about Middle a little bit. And they've got this dynamic trio that they're working with through five conference games. Middle Tennessee's Tamia Scott, 17.2 points per game. Anastasia Bulgareva, 16.8 points per game. Jalen Gregory, 13.2 points per game. They're putting up really big numbers. They also, all three of them, rank in the top 10 scoring in Conference USA. So I know Middle dropped their game. Their 33-game win streak has been snapped, but they're still a really, really good basketball team, and no one needs to forget it.
Yeah, and I don't think – I certainly don't think that Lady Raider fans feel like the sky is falling after that. I mean, I'm sure it hurt a little extra that it was against WKU, but, you know, the talent is still there. And not that these games don't matter, but, you know, I think that they probably have their eyes set on, you know, the run in Huntsville, right? And lifting that trophy again, because that's ultimately, you know, at our level is, you know, you want to punch your ticket and get in that field as easily as possible. You don't want, even for a team like them, you don't want to leave it up to, you know, the committee to be deciding between you and a, you know, and a Power Four team,
right,
or anything like that. So, yeah. Take it easy, Lady Raider fans. I think it'll be just fine. And I, you know, I'll just kind of take a weird, you know, plug here personally. Like, I'm a big Celtics fan, and, you know, Celtics have been kind of struggling this year. And Dane's, giving me Errol Ringer for IU. I'm not freaking out. I'm just saying they are struggling this year. That is a fact compared to last year. But again, it's, you know, then you look at the stats and the talent is all still there, right? Like, they're still top of the metrics. And so it's kind of like, okay, we're just focused on the playoffs. We'll make our run when we need to make our run. I think that's how Middle Tennessee feels, even, you know, being, again, they're still in second place. I think
that's right.
But
yeah, the mighty have not really fallen. It's just going to be okay. I can't wait to see our comment section coming in hot with.
It's going to be all Dane's burners just, trashing me.
Trashing you. Well, we've got a couple of really, really good games coming up again this weekend on the women's side as well. I think one that you look at is Louisiana Tech has two games this weekend, one at WKU on Thursday. Oh, that
they already played.
That is starting to happen. This is, like, very confusing because that game literally ended right before we started recording. So WKU notched a win against Louisiana Tech, which did a little bit of a standing shift. They're now a half game ahead of Louisiana Tech. But now Louisiana Tech goes into Middle Tennessee on Saturday. Can they pull off an upset? I don't know. But Louisiana Tech has a very, very good freshman. We talked about some Kennesaw State freshmen already. But Paris Bradley, she's claimed her fourth consecutive CUSA Freshman of the Week award, averaged 16.5 points and 5.5 rebounds per game in her last two contests. And she's leading the Lady Texters to a led the Lady Texters to a 2-0 week over Kennesaw and Jacksonville State. So they've got some good people on their roster as well. They start a lot of freshmen. There's a lot of similarities actually between Louisiana Tech on the women's side and Kennesaw State on the men's side. So those are my two games to watch this weekend. And then we talked about New Mexico State, Molly Kaiser, and all the things that she is doing with that team. They are sitting there with three wins, but they're going into two games this weekend that are very winnable for them at Jacksonville State and at Kennesaw State. So we'll have to see if they can put two more in the win column there and possibly put themselves towards the top of the standings as well.
Yeah, for sure. And again, going back to our conversation about Huntsville, they were a team that, you know, they were in the semifinals last year. They were right in the mix, you know, potentially pulling off an upset, getting to that title game. So I think just as you know, have more experience, Molly was there. You know, I think just having that loss in your head from the last time you were in that building, you know, is going to kind of fire you up a little bit more. So yeah, I'm excited for Huntsville, if you can't tell.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be, there's going to be some wild basketball.
I was about to say, if you like surprises, okay, I love surprises. If you like surprises, come to Huntsville, because you have no idea what's going to happen there on any given day, in any given game. Tickets are on sale if you want to plug that. conferenceusa.com/Rocket City Hoops. So you can go purchase your tickets there. But we will have to wait quite some time to figure out how standings and seating is going to be determined there. But that's all I have on basketball. Are you good on basketball?
I'm good. Are you ready to
talk some softball?
Yeah, let's talk some softball. Okay. We have a very special guest. I'm excited about this one.
Me too. We have Justin McLeod from D1 Softball joining us in just a few moments. We got to talk to him a little bit earlier, pre-recorded it, and he was fantastic. What a great guest to have on. He's been covering college softball for 14 years, which is crazy. And we talked to him a little bit about how he got into that. But D1 baseball has been around for a long time. D1 softball is now on the scene and has been for about a year. And he is their associate editor there. And he was great to talk to about all things Conference USA softball. And the reason we have him on today is because our preseason awards got released at noon today. So Josh, take it away. All right, everybody. Joining us today, we have a very special guest. I know we've been talking a lot of hoops around here, but softball season is just around the corner. If you missed it, we released our preseason poll and our preseason players of the year and our preseason all-conference team today. So we have a very special guest joining us here on CUSA Insider. Justin McLeod, associate editor of D1 Softball, is joining Josh and I today. And we are so excited to have you, Justin. Thanks for being on the show.
I'm pumped to be here. I'm excited to talk some softball. Season's almost here.
Super exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right around the corner. And, you know, just to kind of highlight, like Sarah mentioned, our release that came out a little bit ago, Liberty, the preseason favorite after capturing the regular season and tournament titles last year in year one in the league. Lady Flames led by preseason player of the year, Rachel Rupi, preseason pitcher of the year, Elena Escobar, four selections to the preseason all-conference team, the most of any team in the conference. And then also, I think a big thing, and I'd mentioned this to Justin when we were kind of talking about this interview, preseason all-conference team has seven returning first-team all-conference honorees. So our teams are loaded with returning talent this year. We've got a lot of intriguing new faces coming into the league as well. So we'll kind of start right here at the top with Liberty. And like I just said, when you talk about the mix of returning talent and some of the new faces, I think Liberty is kind of one, you know, the epitome of that. When you look at the core that they're bringing back, some of the transfers they have coming in. So Justin, what are you expecting from the Lady Flames in year two in CUSA?
Well, I mean, I go back to that regional final in Athens last year where Liberty won win and they're in the Supers. And I think that tells you where Liberty is as a program. And I think the thing for me was they a little more pitching depth and they're there. And I look at this group of returners and you've got a Kalen Yoder who's got a year of experience under. You mentioned Escobar, the preseason pitcher of the year. How well she thrived and flourished last year. I really like Liberty. I like where they are. We know what kind of program Liberty is. Cough, cough, they win a lot. But I really like where Liberty is. You mentioned the transfers. I look to it like a Savannah Woodard, the transfer from Alabama a couple of years ago, you know, finally healthy. I really like how the Flames shape up this year. I think they've got good pitching depth, good offensive depth. I can't find a whole lot to say this is a problem. I think it's just one of those things where with the combination of their got veteran coaches, we know what Dot Richardson, again, she wins. But I really like the veterans on the field, the fact that they had that experience of that run last year, also leaving them a little hungry, you know, not quite finishing the job. I really like where Liberty is this year.
Well, I mean, you mentioned, you know, four of their last 5 years have actually ended in the regional final. So what do they have to do this year to get over the hump? I know you've been watching college softball and covering college softball for a long time. Like you said, Liberty wins, Dot Richardson wins, but they haven't seemed to be able to get to the biggest games. So how do they get over the hump and get out of those regional finals this year?
I think the biggest piece is pitching depth. I think it always comes back to the pitching. I think if you have a little better pitching depth in that regional last year, I think we're probably talking about Liberty finishing their season in the Supers or the World Series last year. I think pitching's always going to be, you know, the old adage, pitching and defense wins ball games. Pitching still wins ball games. But I think pitching depth, especially in a regional, when you have how many games in the course of a weekend, you've got at least one, usually a couple high-powered opponents. I think it all comes down to the pitching depth. And I like their pitching depth. Last year, I think a little bit of, you know, banged up, a little bit inexperienced kind of hit them. But again, with what they're bringing back and what they brought in, I think they've got a shot. I think all this is going to come down to the pitching.
Let's talk about some other teams that maybe will contend for a CUSA title this year. We'll start with New Mexico State, picked third in the preseason poll, got the only remaining first place vote that Liberty didn't get. They kind of maybe surprised some people in year one in Conference USA. They were one of the last three teams standing at the tournament, kind of fell short of getting to that championship game, but they bring a lot of power back between Desiree Spearman, last year's player of the year, Devin Elam. But the Aggies, you know, going back to your comment on how important pitching is, that was where they kind of lacked a lot of consistency last year when Desiree wasn't pitching and wasn't in the circle. So do you think they have enough this year with, you know, some of the pieces they brought in, you know, on both sides to make a run?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think New Mexico State probably is my biggest sleeper team in the conference this year. We know what they can do on the offense, and they've been doing it for a long time. Honestly, I really like watching the balls just fly in the New Mexico air. It's one of my favorite things. So we know how hard they hit. They hit a lot of home runs and always have, but I really think their pitching could be their secret weapon this year. You have Spearman. We know what she's made of. We saw her as a freshman. You bring in Aragon from UTEP, kind of knows the conference already, which I think is a strength. And she was consistent. She was solid. So you bring her in now, she compliments Spearman. And oh, by the way, you go and get Taryn Bennett from Hampton, who was solid as well on a Hampton team that didn't have a ton of success. And that always stands out to me when an individual player kind of outperforms their team a little bit. I actually think New Mexico State's pitching could be one of their be their underrated strength and be one of their greatest strengths this year. I actually think they've got a real shot of having some good success in the circle. If they can get those three and what else they have in the pen put together, I actually think we could be talking about a New Mexico State team that pitched their way to something and just scored a bunch of runs besides. Like, I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, and that New Mexico State air is definitely no joke. I think Dane, our producer, who was there with me at the softball championship, can attest to this. And I just think back to that first game in the championship for them, you know, walk-off home run by Jillian Taylor. That ball goes up in the air. Everyone in the ballpark, including Jillian, probably thinks that that's a routine fly ball that's caught in front of the track. And that thing carries and carries and carries. And then all of a sudden, she's celebrating at home plate. I mean, it is insane how much the ball can just take off out there.
Yeah, I love watching games, New Mexico, Arizona. It's one of my favorite things because the ball, you tap it and it just goes. It just goes.
It's fun. It's fun out there for sure. Well, I wanted to talk about another team that is obviously picked towards the top of the preseason poll, WKU. A huge roster turnover for them this year. They lost a lot off of last year's roster. They return 11 underclassmen, one senior going into 2025. Very young team this year, but obviously the other coaches in the league don't doubt for one second Amy Tudor's ability to bring up a great squad, picked second in Conference USA going into the preseason. But what do you think it's going to take for WKU to make their mark in the league this year? Such a fresh-faced team. They also host the softball tournament this year for Conference USA, which has some pull. We know we saw last year in New Mexico State. Yeah. It's always nice to play on your home field. But what does WKU have to do this year to step up and maybe match the quality of the Liberty Flames or the New Mexico State Aggies, who were also so good this past year?
I think they have to overcome that youth. I mean, you bring in players because you know what they're made of. But when you have to put a lot of, not pressure, but a lot of expectation, you might say, on a bunch of freshmen, a bunch of young players, sometimes it can go one of a couple of different very drastic ways. I just think they need to overcome that youth. And by that can look a lot of ways. Whether you've got young players who play like upperclassmen, whether you've got, you know, young players who maybe just play their way into spots they otherwise, you know, maybe didn't have at the start of the season, by conference they're playing in the starting lineup. And that's the biggest thing for me with WKU is, can they overcome that youth? They did lose a lot. I mean, when you graduate a Katie Gardner in the circle, that's going to hurt. Like, that's, you're going to feel that. Then when you take a Taylor Sanders or TJ Webster, both out of the offense at once, all of a sudden you've got really big shoes to fill in a lot of different spots. You're right. I mean, the coaches clearly have faith, and I think there's a foundation for that because WKU also wins a good chunk. Like they win a good bit. They win at a good cadence. So I think that's fair. It's just for me that might be where my biggest question mark is, because WKU does win, but they have so much youth. They have so much that's unproven, and they don't have a huge roster to draw from either. So it's going to be some, not necessarily sink or swim, but there's going to be some battling going on, you know? And so I'm curious what WKU is going to be made of. I do think they have a shot, don't get me wrong, but I think that shot's going to come more from the way the program is set up and just what the level of expectation is there, more than, oh, well, I see, you know, they've got a super talented roster, they're, you know, kind of thing like that. I think it's going to come more from the program's prestige and those freshmen and those young players kind of step up to meet that if they have success.
Justin, when you look at our schedule, so you have Jack State and La Tech in the Rocket City Showcase with a couple of SEC teams in that field. Liberty's playing in the spring games. They're also playing in the Shriners event in Clearwater. La Tech also has another big opportunity at the down in Puerto Vallarta. They play a couple top 10 teams in that one. How important is that type of scheduling for a league like CUSA, who's had the potential to be a multi-bid league in years past and has been not too long ago? So as you look ahead to the postseason field, to the decisions by the committee, how important is that?
Oh, it's huge. It's enormously huge. Because the one thing we've seen with the softball committee, especially in the past several years, is they're willing to reward mid-majors. It's not just what Power 5, Power 14 can we put in. They're willing to reward the mid-majors who put in the work, who have the resume. So having those resumes is incredibly key. I look at, you mentioned La Tech playing in the Rocket City. I think at the end of the day, I think La Tech plays either 5 or 6 SEC teams this season. We know Liberty being over there playing in Clearwater, but even in their midweeks, they play the Virginia Techs and the Clemsons and the South Carolinas of the world. Like, we've seen those teams play those schedules, you know, WKU playing Kentucky and Louisville almost annually, it feels like. Those games matter, and they play a big difference, especially when you pick up, like, even if you just have 2 or 3 wins over those teams. What that does for your RPI, but also what that does for your resume when it comes to the postseason, it's incredibly huge. And I like the fact that CUSA teams are willing to play those schedules. Like, you know, La Tech probably doesn't think they're going to beat 5 or 6 SEC teams in the same season. But if you play them, and especially if you get accustomed to, you know, that level and, you know, the speed of the pitching and whatever else, you know what? Your odds get better every time you play another one. And all of a sudden, maybe you pull off 2 or 3 wins, maybe a couple of wins. Well, that sets you up really well for the postseason. That kind of scheduling is incredibly key, and I really like what some CUSA teams have done with it this year. You know, sometimes you got to be willing to take a knock on the chin to set yourself up for the knockout punch around later. And I think there's quite a few CUSA teams who have done that. I think it's good for them. I think it's good for the conference as a whole.
Yeah, I love that. I love the way you put that. Well, Justin, I have another question for you. So you said New Mexico State, you think that might be your sleeper team. Are there any other teams in the league that you think are either going to make a huge improvement from what they did last year, or who you might consider a sleeper team for maybe not winning the conference championship, but making a big long run deep into the conference championship?
So I'll mention La Tech, and I think if La Tech can get some pitching behind Allie Floyd, get a couple freshmen, maybe step up, get a little consistency on the offense, I think they actually have the talent and the skill set to get there. I really like what Josh Taylor's done down there since he got there. Like, it was an overnight turnaround. And if they can get that consistency on the offense, maybe a second arm in the circle, I think they've got a real shot at making a run. And I'll throw out here FIU as well. I think they've got some talent on the roster. I really like, I think I mentioned Bailey Grossenbacher in my preseason CUSA preview at D1. But I also know Mike Larrabee knows how to coach a softball team. He knows his stuff. But now you've also got an FIU team that's playing for Larrabee with his health issues. Like, you cannot underestimate that. When a coach is popular with his team, when he's got them turned around after a few years, you can't underestimate the level and the value and the importance of playing for that coach. So I think FIU's got a little bit – I think they've got the talent to do it, don't get me wrong, but I think they've got a little bit of an X factor there too. Now they've got their, you know, wearing the ability to honor their coach on their sleeve.
And I think too, you know, I was looking up Mike Myers' resume yesterday, just in light of that news. And I mean, the two of them have worked together for decades. They have a ton of experience working together. So I think if there's anybody who knows how Mike would want that team to be coached and who I think the team can rally around because of his familiarity in the locker room, I think he's the perfect guy to really help them capitalize on the season. So you know, and obviously our prayers go out to the program, to Mike, as he can, you know, begins this battle. And, you know, obviously it's something very personal to me. Lost my dad and grandfather both to cancer. So cancer sucks, man. And it's tough. But, you know, definitely feel for that team right now.
Yeah, I was curious if you were going to mention the Panthers. They might have been, they were mine, my sleeper team, for sure, going into it. Well, Justin, I do want to ask you some questions. Just, since we have you on, we're here to talk Conference USA softball, but I'm so curious about you and how you got into writing and covering college softball. Obviously, D1 softball, a little bit newer. People have known D1 baseball for years. Finally, D1 softball has its space. It's been around for about a year now. But you've been covering college softball for like 14 or 15 years before now. So how did you get into it and why do you love this sport so much?
So it's actually funny because the answer to the first part of that leads right into the answer to the second part of that. So I was a newspaper guy. I'm still a newspaper guy at heart. Don't get me wrong. But at a certain point in time, it was okay. I just needed to find something else. I love the writing. I love the telling the stories and all that. But I needed a different outlet. I needed some things to look different. And I just kind of just honestly randomly, I'm like, okay, these are the boxes I want to check. I want a sport that I can concentrate on. I want a sport that I enjoy. Softball was the other thing that checked all those boxes. And this was back 2012, 2013. So we're talking a hot minute ago. And I was like, you know, it's sink or swim. Like maybe it doesn't work, but let me try it. And turned out it was a market that had just not been tapped into. That I didn't start with just a love for college softball. Like I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed watching the game, that kind of stuff. I covered it, you know, high schools and when I was doing the paper and all that kind of stuff. But in it a year, maybe 2 years. And the one thing I realized was the people in this sport, I'm going to say they're like no other. Granted, I'm not in any other college sports. I could be wrong about that. I just don't think I am. The people in this sport are like no other. And the one thing, getting to tell some of the stories I've gotten to tell, I've had coaches and players who have let me tell some deeply personal stories about, you know, we were just talking about cancer sucking. I had one coach who had a gene that almost could lead to a significant increase in the chance of having cancer and the battle she went through to prevent that. And she opened up to me and I got to tell that story. And I have players who I get to tell all kinds of great stories. I had one player who actually took a year off from college softball to go be deployed in the National Guard for a year and then was going to come back and play. Like those are the kind of stories that you just don't realize how incredible they are until you're the one tasked with telling them. But the trust of people in the sport of softball almost right away to be able to let me tell those stories and to see the people in the sport, that's what's kept me going. I mean, this is season 14. This is year two for me at D1. That's the best part of this job. And that's the thing through all the, you know, COVID and all that kind of stuff. Some of the stories that I got to tell through that. I travel a lot and sometimes I luck into stories. I'm not even going to lie. But that's absolutely the best part of it is just getting to tell somebody's story. And just the way people in this sport are, it's the best part.
Yeah, and I'll echo a lot of that. I mean, it's one sport that's really been special to me just since I got my start in college athletics. I did it way back when I was over at North Texas. And yeah, some of my best memories, just working memories are, you know, those bus trips of just talking to some of these girls and learning their stories, and learning about their families and what makes them tick and what fuels them to be incredible Division I softball players. And, you know, now still getting the chance to cover it has been awesome and getting to see, you know, some of the stories that we have in this league. So the incredible coaches we have in this league, we didn't even really talk about it going through our teams, but, you know, another team that can be an intriguing one this year is Jack State. Mm-hmm. And the first year not under Jana McGinnis since I think before I was, you know, before any of us were born, it feels like, you know, her name was already on the stadium. I mean, she is such a pillar in the city of Jacksonville. But again, yeah, just such an awesome sport. I was just actually at a conference communicators meeting last week at the NCAA convention, and we were going around. The icebreaker was like, what is your favorite sport to cover? And, you know, everyone's saying football, men's basketball, you know, whatever. And I was like, softball. And I was like, yeah, and I said, I still get to cover a sport on the diamond, and it's two fewer innings. But, you know, and obviously selfishly, that's more on the SID side. But no, I mean, just going back to what you said, it's just such an incredible sport. It's so fun. I love that championship is one of my favorite championships to watch, and just seeing the emotion. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get off my soapbox now.
That's all right. That's what we're here for. Well, Justin, we really appreciate everything that you do for the sport of softball. Coverage has been awesome with D1 softball now, and so go follow D1 softball on all social media if you get the chance. Justin is there, the keyboard warrior in a good way for college softball, and we're excited to see how our Conference USA teams do this year. I think we're gonna fare pretty well. We're a decent softball conference, people, so I'm excited to see. Maybe we can grab that second bid again this year, and 2025 coming in hot, just a week away, 2 weeks away.
Yeah. Ooh. February 6th.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
so we're excited. Justin, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate you guys, it was fun.
Thank you again to Justin McLeod of D1 Softball for joining us here today. We enjoyed our chat with him and are very, very excited to get softball season underway here in just 2 weeks. But we have a lot of men's and women's basketball going on tonight and Saturday, and you can find almost every single one of those games on ESPN+. But there are two matchups I want to make you aware of that are on linear television. Both men's Louisiana Tech games will be on linear television this week. Tonight's game is WKU at Louisiana Tech. That game is at 6 p.m. Central Time on CBS Sports Network. And then on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Central Time, you can catch Middle Tennessee at Louisiana Tech on ESPNU. All right, everybody. That is pretty much it that I have for today, but I want to make sure that you are following us and liking us and doing all the things you can to give us engagement on social media. Go find us at CUSA Insider Pod on X and Instagram. Make sure you're subscribed to Conference USA on YouTube so that you never miss a new video episode of the podcast. But if you are still audio only, we want to welcome you in as well, but make sure you're subscribed so you never miss a new episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And if you ever want to reach out to us, you can actually do so via email at CUSAinsider@conferenceusa.com. I check those email addresses personally, so make sure you reach out to us and let us know if you have anything that you would like us to cover on the show. All right, everyone, that is all for today. You are listening to CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Sarah Rudolph, signing off.